Hello everyone, Freeman here again to talk more about episode 100 and this bonus content meant to set you up for success. Starting out, following this little speech of mine, you're actually going to get a taste of some of the early recording material. You may have noticed already from the chapter 1 recap that we had one more player than we started with in Stemming the Tide. We'll get ready for one more on top of that. In order to bridge the gap of the events between chapters 1 and 2, I had come up with an idea to record semi-planned and semi-improvised vignettes, as we called them, which feature characters from Chapter 1 and new ones that would be introduced in Chapter 2. In the grand scheme of things, these characters, like before, take a bit of a supporting role to Aelin, but are well featured in this next segment at the very least. These also set the stage for the next adventure hook for Aelin and crew and what they planned for the fish camp that they so bravely liberated. These little snippets gave us an introduction to NPCs we would get to know in Stemming the Tide, and even a closer peek at one that had not seen much airtime until now. They also explore how the fish camp became known as Aelin Weinmar's Rotten Boat Club with the help of the Otari community. While the audio quality may not be as high a standard as we try to maintain now, who knows, maybe James actually worked his magic and made it so anyway, I hope you enjoy these vignettes nonetheless. I think they're super fun. A big thanks goes out to Frank and Marshall, who were part of our test recording phase, but sadly could not commit to the project long term. The very least, you'll get to hear the fun flavor they added to our experience. These vignettes will be followed by a recap of our playthrough of Chapter 2, which is presented in two parts. And if you are listening on the Patreon-only feed, stay tuned, like Chapter 1, for behind-the-scenes discussions after each part. The sun already hanging low, and the bustling of the Otari fishery already evident, even from outside. Aelin and Arthur, you enter with a mixed sense of excitement, nervousness, and self-assurance. As if waiting for your arrival, Tamily beams a big toothy smile at the moment you enter, and immediately begins to hobble toward you with surprising speed. Plentiful ribbons and bows of blue and white are today's regalia for Tamily's peg leg, bouncing with every step and thump.
Arthur, so good to see you! Back from your job already!
And Mr. Weinmar, I live and breathe. Not a scratch on you from all the critters at me old fish camp, eh? No trouble from Blue Finley, like I said?
Surely thanks to our forever rascal here. To what do I owe this pleasure?
She hands you both mugs of ale you didn't even notice she was carrying, and quickly supplies Arthur with his favorite, a nice, flaky sausage roll.
Ah, Tamily. Times are well at the new fishing camp. We've dealt with all the issues. Even Blue Finley. We've actually come back to talk a little business with you, if you don't mind.
Well, certainly, why don't you step into my office? And she plunks down at the nearest table.
Fabulous, thank you.
Go on, sit.
Great. The first order of business is, I would love to keep on Arthur. He's been such a good worker, and I just want to run that by you.
Oh, Arthur's always been his own shoney. You know, always helping around town. I've got no say-so. The offer always stands there, Arthur. You always have a job here, but... You do as you please. He'll be a great asset, I'm sure.
That is very kind of you, Miss Tamily. The truth is, getting out and stretching my legs has been rather refreshing. Reminds me of my youth in my days in Absalom. A new adventure every day. I'm very much enjoying the company, the spirit, and the fresh air.
Makes me wonder if the reason you're so short is maybe you didn't stretch enough.
Ha ha ha.
So what's this business, then? Second order?
Second order of business, indeed. Now, Tamily, I can't thank you enough for the original offer and getting us set up in this new fishing camp. It's been wonderful so far, and we're really looking to take it to the next level. I am here to talk to you about a loan.
Oh, is that right? What sort of deal are you looking for here?
Well, we can button down a price after we just negotiate a little bit, but... Basically, I'm looking to overhaul the camp, give it a renovation, have it looking fresh and new for our visitors. We're going to turn it into a hunting and fishing camp. It'll be glorious.
Oh, and exactly how refined are you looking to make this camp?
I mean, it won't be like a noble house in Absalom, but I think it'll be quite nice. Quaint. Cabin chic, if you will.
What sort of clientele you looking at?
Oh, we're looking for nobles. Looking to get away from the big city. Give them an outdoorsy kind of adventure. I think it'll be great and very popular.
Right. We do have a lot of travelers to and from Otari, but the big money doesn't tend to come by. That's not a terrible idea there, Aelin.
Well, thank you very much. As I said, we'd love to keep on Arfur as our lead fisherman to help out, catch some fish for us, and show the nobles how to do it.
That sounds great. So what's the plan to pay me back then? We can discuss the cost later, like you said, but what sort of things you're charging here? What do you got?
Now, this is where we're going to defer to Arfur a little bit, as we're going to pay you back with fish to begin with. And I think after a short time of paying back that loan slowly, we will start to pay you back once we have visitors in. Then we can pay you back in cash as well.
Right. Arfur, you're for such a task, are you?
Well, you know how good I am in a boat with a rod, and being on the ocean with a little bit more room to work, as long as the alligators or crocodiles do not take them all, I think I can keep you well supplied in the fishes.
Right. Well, you know there's some rare fish out that way there, Arthur, that we don't quite get in the bay here, so you make sure you bring me those first, right?
Oh, that's what I'm counting on, Tamale. The regular bass and fish are fine and well and good, but if Aelin wants to turn this into a noble fish camp, we will be hunting the marlin, the big fish, the shiny fish, and the colorful fish.
Her eyes are just like beaming now, just sparkling at the idea.
Now, Tamale, just to further sweeten the deal for you here, I know that it's going to be quite a bit of cash up front, and I want you to know that we're good for it. But moving forward, how about this? Every time I bring a noble to my camp, I will bring them by your games hall, at least one time during their trip, to bring some of their gold and spend it at your establishment. Does that sweeten the deal a little bit?
Mr. Weinmar, you know exactly how to sweeten the pot, don't you? I think we can make ourselves a deal here, my fellas. Let's drop a contract, shall we?
Sounds wonderful.
Entering the squat, bunker-like building that houses the town guard, the utilitarian furnishings and stark lack of decor are a telltale sign of who is in charge. Krugga has unconsciously held onto a scrunched face of discomfort ever since entering town, wrinkling even more upon entering here. Aelin, in quick tow, dressed to impress and latching onto an air of confidence. You both approach a desk squarely placed in front of the main entrance. The clerk behind the desk begins to wave their hand dismissively, shaking their head and beginning to speak without looking up. We're not taking any requests today from the locals. If you need to file a report, you'll find the forms over on the door at the back of this makeshift lobby. Swings open with a slam, and out marches a man with impeccable posture, belying his medium height and slim build. His mutton chop connected mustache is thick but well-maintained, while penetrating gaze shooting out from under a constantly furrowed brow takes in every inch of the room. Gerald, why wasn't I informed our newest entrepreneur has come to pester me? Disgust oozing from the rhetorical question. Gerald foolishly attempts to reply. Never mind, Gerald. He marches up to Aelin and stands firm. What do you want, Mr. Weinmar?
Aelin looks at the captain with a smirk, looking down at him from his 6-foot stature. Ah, Captain Longsaddle, what a pleasure to finally meet you. I've been hoping we'd cross paths sooner, but today is just as good.
Listen, Weinmar, I'm a man of action, so you can cut with the pleasantries. What do you want?
Ah, a man of business. I do appreciate that. Let's talk. I'm looking for, I don't want to say a favor, but a proposition. I'll be bringing nobles into town to come to my hunting and fishing club, and I was hoping that we could get some increased patrols along the trail to the resort.
Increased patrols? You waltz into town here, barely bothered to ask any questions about why I shouldn't be bothered. And now you want me to patrol more? Kruga, what the hell are you doing here?
With a deep breath and kind of turned away, Kruga starts under his breath, Lardis fucking Longsaddle, and turns around. Lardis Longsaddle! Well met, my friend. Let me tell you, we need your help. You are the only thing that can help our situation right now. There's a big boon coming to this city, and it's going to help all of us if you can increase your patrols, keep the pests off of the trail.
Right. So what you're saying is you're going to bless the economy of Otari with your noble money, and you need my help because, what, you're going to be taxpayers. Great. Well, here's the thing. I've got a little situation of my own. See, a good number of my guards turned 40 in the last year, and you know what that means. Or do you, since you're new in town, haven't bothered done your research? Well, I'll tell you what it means. It means a lot of them are retiring to barrister and clerical work, which makes me short-handed. Now, I've got some new recruits that I'm training up right now. Hopefully, they'll be a little better than the last batch. But that's going to take some time. So I'll tell you what, Mr. Weinmar, Kruga, I'm sure you've got some extra aim in this, but what I need from you is to be at my beck and call. If there's something around town I need help of, you help. You do your part, and once my new recruits are trained, I'll patrol your silly little trail.
Ah, Captain Longsaddle. I'm surprised you waited this long to ask. Of course we are here at your beck and call. We are just humble citizens of the beautiful town of Otari. Taxpayers. We'll help you whatever you need. In fact, that would be great. Just if you could help us as well.
You could see his mustache like lump up on one side as his lip curls because he just realized that you've turned it around on him to make it sound like he needs you and he doesn't know how to handle it. He's like,
all right, then, if you're a man of business, shake on it. We have a deal. My beck and call, mind.
Ah, we have a deal. It'll be mutually beneficial to both of us, I promise. Once all this noble money starts rolling in, it'll be great for the town. Perhaps even for your outfit. You know, you could have a little extra coin around here. Have some extra guards on staff. It'd be no problem at all. In fact, it would be my pleasure. May I call you Lardis?
You may not. And let's get one thing clear. The least amount that I hear about you and you hear about me is the better. I'm not looking to form no relationships. I've got a job to do.
He shakes your hand, nods, says, Mr. Weinmar. And he turns his head towards Kruga and says,
Kruga?
Kruga spits in his hand. Hell, what's a neighbor for? And goes for the shake.
The sign over the front door of the Crow's Casks punctuates the rowdiness that can be heard from inside. A group of drunken crows perched on a leaky cask is all too appropriate a visual for the crowing drunks happily partaking in the cask's wellspring inside this popular establishment. Upon entering, dollar signs could very well be found in the eyes of one David Ettercap, as this place is ripe for the picking when it comes to entertainment. When the bulk of the crowd seems to be focused around a single table in one corner, fishers and loggers and woodcutters fill this room nearly to the brim anyway. And even Aelin's lithe build offers no more room for navigating than does David's small stature. Bumping shoulders and elbows, spilling drinks and offering apologies, the partners make their way to the bar where they find a black-feathered Tengu directing bar staff, a purple robe adorning their body, and a kit of alchemical ingredients ever at the ready in one hand. The Tengu adds dashes of this and pinches of that to many of the drinks being served. Despite the chaos, the Tengu spots you both as you approach and quickly abandons the nearly panicked bartenders.
Ah, I was wondering when you might show.
You must have heard about my famous concoctions, my delicious libations, and my eccentric potables. Come, come, my name is Majeloy. What can I get you? And she deftly plunks onto the bar vial after bottle after flask after decanter after carafe of innumerable liquids and mixtures.
Ah, Majeloy, so good to meet you. And sorry it's taken us so long to come around. My name is Aelin Weinmar, and I as well come from the beverage industry. I used to make wine.
Oh, it's in the name, isn't it? A strong name, Weinmar.
Indeed, I'm from Zimar, and we used to brew glorious wine there.
Oh, beautiful.
Old world Zins.
And how about you, Mr. Ettercap?
Oh, I've lived much more of a simple life myself. Better with words than I am with my hands. I think that we might be able to come to an arrangement, though. You might have heard that we're starting up a new enterprise. The old fishing lodge. We're looking to give it a bit of a spit shine.
Ah, yes. Word on the street is that you are looking to bring in some big money nobles.
Oh, we most certainly are. And the two of us have spent some time around them in the past, so we tend to know what they're looking for. And we hear that your concoctions might just be that. Something unique and special. And I kind of reach over and start, like, moving my fingers along the different vials and sort of looking them up and inspecting them.
Well, have you curated a list already? I can absolutely arrange the intake of various goods and services for you. I'll even make the arrangements with Aloya Galantine for the deliveries, if you like. Of course, I do need my cut.
Ah, of course. There'll be enough money to go around. Gold shall be flowing like the wine and other beverages.
And her eyes, like, sparkle.
I believe that my compatriot David here has come up with some ideas.
This is lovely. Well, I will make the arrangements and we can sort out the details. But I do have one favor to ask.
Oh? What would sweeten the deal?
Well, Mr. Weinmar, Mr. Ettercap, are you in need of some extra labor? I've heard the fish camp is quite run down.
We are always in need of a couple extra helping hands. Do you have someone in mind?
Indeed I do. You see, where everyone's gathered at that table over there, well, we've got another new arrival in town, and he's beating everybody at the arm wrestling matches and boasting a bit too boldly. He's kind of getting everybody a bit riled up, and quite frankly, they're not buying enough booze.
That is a problem.
If you can take him off my hands, I will make the arrangements.
Well, he sounds like he's handy, I guess.
He's strong, at least.
Well, perhaps he might be able to give Krugger a run for his money.
Well, thank you very much. We'll be in touch about some orders in the future. David, why don't we go check this man out?
I look forward to it.
I pull a scroll from inside my jacket and I slide it across the counter to the Tengu and I'm like, go through this first. If you see anything on there that's outside of your areas of expertise, please let me know right away because we'll need to adjust the menu accordingly.
She unfolds it and cocks her head a couple times like, interesting. Oh yeah, okay. It just kind of wanders off.
You can find pineapple mint, yes?
She's already gone, like just absorbed in it.
Aelin is like very delicately just guiding himself through the group and the big crowd of people towards the table.
And there you see a magnificent sign of this pretty beastly dude arm wrestling somebody. What does this guy look like?
Oh, well, I'll tell you. He's a big fella, as you said. Completely bald, but with a thick, black, oiled mustache. He's got show muscles, I'd say. One of the folks that, cultivates for size and impressiveness, not necessarily for actually being able to lift things. He's wearing sort of a tattered jumpsuit that was probably nicely made at some point in the past, but, you know, these days is soiled as if he, you know, spent the last night sleeping in a ditch. And, yeah, just a big, muscly beast of a guy, but friendly. Not intimidating, but jovial, jolly.
And he just, like, at this point, slams the other guy's arm down. And there's more groans and annoyances than cheers because he just keeps winning and keeps winning. The locals are starting to get annoyed by this out-of-towner. But upon his victory, up walks Aelin and David.
Aelin approaches the table with a smile. Sir, an impressive victory. I've heard you've had many. What is your name?
Hello, friend. Yes, I've had many victories so far in this tavern, fighting against weak villagers here. My name is Great Miroslav, but I'm certain you knew that already. I'm sure the talk of me is made it through this entire town.
Oh, yes. Of course I've heard of you. I just didn't realize at first, and he winks at David. Are you looking for work by chance?
I mean, it depends on what work you're talking about. I've already taken much money from all of these villagers here, so if it is challenge, if it is a possibility for glory, then it could be work I'd be interested in.
David starts to look at the little collection of coins upon the table that he's developed there, and he's like, this, is but a pittance compared to the riches that flow from the great Aelin Weinmar, one of the wealthiest nobles that has ever walked this region. You would be wise to listen to my employer.
Well, tell me, will there be villains to defeat and enemies to vanquish?
Well, you'd be getting in on the ground floor of something very special. And let me tell you, we've already had to slay many, many beasts in our journey so far, and I'm sure there'll be more to come. And plus, we need some strong hands, and you appear to be the strongest man I've ever seen.
Oh, flattery! It will always get you far with me. I'm used to it, and I expect it.
Wonderful. Well, perhaps you can come back to our camp with us, and we will show you our new investment.
Well, fine. Most of these villagers have only copper pieces left, so perhaps it is time for me to be leaving this establishment. I will, I'll come with you, see what you have to show.
Excellent. Well, pack up your pennies, my goodman, and let's take you to a place where you can make some real gold.
Slightly run down with a few patchwork repairs, the unassuming tavern known as the Crook's Nook sits atop a bridge just ahead of where the Osprey River runs out into the ocean to the south. Despite its lack of refined aesthetic, the incredible mouth-watering smell of seafood-based cuisine wafts through the doorway as you enter, Aelin. A few heads turn your way and a few lean to look at an opponent's cards. But for the most part, you seem to go unnoticed as these heads turn back to their company, some with rightful scowls and sneers. A lanky woman with medium-length hair, dark brown, enters from the back door behind the bar and catches your eye. She walks up to the bar, picks up a cloth, and begins to wipe the wood down in a slightly unnatural way, one eye never moving from you.
Aelin walks in and walks to the bar. As he approaches, he reaches into his coin purse and pulls out a silver coin. He rolls it across the top of his knuckles into between his pointer finger and his thumb and raps it on the bar. Excuse me, are you the proprietor here? May I have something to drink?
What would you like?
We are in Otari. I'll have a mead. I know that you're famous for that.
She kind of grunts, turns around, pours you a mead, sets it on the bar.
Aelin takes a long sip. Again, he maintains eye contact with her as she is with him. With a smirk, says, I'm looking for some information, and perhaps you can help me.
She just keeps staring at you.
I ran afoul of some ruffians when I was passing through Absalom. I'm originally from Zamar, but I live in Otari now. And
she puts a finger up and simply says, follow me. She leads you to an unassuming corner of the main room and wraps her knuckles on the wall in a peculiar pattern. An attic ladder suddenly descends from the ceiling and she begins to climb, gesturing to follow. Not a single patron looks up. Climbing to the top, a handful of people, all human save for a single Tengu, stand around, eyeing you up and down, your own eye quickly discerning more than a few hidden weapons among them. The woman walks to a chair at the back and center of the attic, sits down, and simply says,
what can I do for you, Mr. Weinmar?
Aelin rests his hand on the pommel of his elven curved blade at his side, but smiles cheerfully As I said, I ran afoul of some ruffians while passing through Absalom, and I was just wondering if you were the type of person who would know if they were following me here.
I see. Well, I can assure you that no one's been looking for anyone by the name of Aelin Weinmar. But I could keep my ear to the ground for someone of your description, if that's what you're looking for.
Yes, that is what I'm looking for. And in fact, that would be wonderful. How much would it cost me for this endeavor?
A man of business, I like this. Well, you see, I would like you to meet somebody. Jack. And she kind of waves at the Tengu to come over. This here is an associate of mine. I would like him to be a liaison of sorts. For a business deal, I would like you to accept.
Well met. My name is Aelin Weinmar, and what's yours?
Master Weinmar, I am Jakira Sternbeck. Well met. As our proprietor has mentioned, we appreciate a man of business, and I hope we can forge a business relationship.
Ah, I too enjoy this. Just the three of us, all here for business. It's very nice.
All of the others, like, shift in the room at your blatant ignoring of them. Who is now very clearly Yin Yasmara, the leader of the Osprey Club, the Thieves Guild in Otari. She gives you a bit of a smirk and says, "You see, I have some fine goods that you might be interested in. It is actually quite fortuitous that you are here. See, these goods come in the form of things like furniture, decor, and such on. Tell me, Mr. Weinmar, do you have use of these?"
Aelin smirks again. "I think you already know that I am in need of such things. I do believe you are the type of person who would have that information already, so I do appreciate this business offer. I'm getting ready to upgrade my new hunting and fishing club, so I could move a little of that weight off your hands."
"Right. Well, I do love the idea of rich and noble blood coming through, Otari. We mostly get adventurers, of course. But perhaps Jack can accompany you to your new estate. He is quite handy for basic labor and will operate as my liaison for these fine goods. And believe you me, they will come at a very good price."
"That works well for me. I just ask that if your hands find pockets of the nobles I bring to town, that it happens on their way out, not their way in."
"I'm sure we can come to some sort of arrangement. But let's talk when you've finished, eh?"
"Absolutely. Jack, pleasure to have you aboard."
"The pleasure is mine."
Fast forward. The fish camp was quite something else entirely. After securing a loan from Tamily and cutting a deal with the leader of the local thieves' guild, Yin Yasmara, the whole place was refurnished, better tended, and well stocked thanks to the supply lines provided by Magiloy at the Crow's Casks. And of course, the newest helping hands of Jakira and Miroslav. The staff had their humble quarters, including Aelin's own, and the grand and beautiful suites for the guests were rustically decorated and the best comfortably made with the finest down. Aelin Weinmar's Rod and Bow Club was nearly ready to open, all at a steal of a deal, as it were. But alas, this is not a story about what fell off the back of a wagon, or when it may have fallen under the law of finders and keepers. After all said and done thus far, the road to success lay ahead. Only one thing remained: prove they could be part of something larger than themselves. And when the beck of Captain Longsaddle came, the crew answered the call, one and all. Quill and parchment ready in David Ettercap's hand, of course. enter Aloria Galantine of Galantine's Deliveries. The first request for help and the first task for the club crew was to find a courier that was running quite late. Nerala was a mostly reliable courier, a centaur not known for dawdling, but known for a short-fused temper that occasionally got her into trouble. Aloria was growing concerned with her late arrival from Absalom, and so the first task was set for pursuit, and the first step towards something much more than was bargained for. And that's no creative flourish to simply sell a sequel. Heading along the Granary Road the opposite direction of months before, tracing the trail most used by the couriers, a local farmer spotted the crew and called for help along the way. Arson, he claimed, at the next farm over. And sure enough, the evidence of deadly fires were but a shot away. Though it was not the work of some local ragamuffin or wandering scoundrel, but of wolves and hellhounds who had trapped some locals within their home. Never minding the odd boldness of the wolves and strange occurrence of fiends, and Miroslav's shocking inefficacy in his first fight, the villains were dispatched and the farmers and their livelihoods saved. Hala Highstepper, leader of the Otari Farmers Guild, was among them, and she gave her assurance the guild would band together to repair the damage done and see to it the farm was restored to working order. And David ticked another box off the improvised checklist of tasks complete. After all, it's not only what is asked that needs to be done. And this was no small feat. Back to the road they went, continuing their search for Nerala. And find her they did, amid circumstances beyond dire. As they turned a bend in the road, she stood there, statuesque, in the most literal sense. Turned to stone from head to toe in a defensive posture, her hindquarters torn and crumbled away into rubble. It was not long before the creature responsible crawled from the brush, seeking to make a similar meal of the crew. A brutal fight was fought, in which Miroslav was encased in stone himself for nearly the entirety. And the beast, the basilisk, was eventually slain. At odds with whom to save from the petrification, and with limited time to do with the still warm blood of the beast, because they could not know how long Nerala was frozen in rock, or if she was past the point of saving with such grievous wounds. The supposed strongman was chosen for rescue, despite his apparent role as nothing more than fodder for their foes. Before the group could return to town with the unfortunate news of Nerala's fate, the realization struck that the parcels she was carrying were nowhere to be seen. And fortuitously, they found some pesky scavenging kobolds who swiped the packages around the next nearest bend. Quickly cowed they were, and the parcel retrieved for safe return. And return the party did, with a stern warning to the Dragonkin and a scribble and sketch in David's notes. Appreciation and distress, mostly distress, was offered by Aloria when the news came, and further requests for aid as she was now down an impressive employee, and would pour what resources she had remaining into the recovery of Nerala. In their role as the daytime de facto town guard, the crew perhaps did not expect to be sent on what appeared to be menial errands around town. But this is a small town, with a small town life. And while the occasional tensions need squelching in taverns at night, by day, a guard's duty is to community, and services required thereof. And thus, the promising new members of this community were sent to deliver the contents of the parcels to their respective local residents. Spicy peppers for Magiloy, dried herbs for Abanye Niana, the local healer and midwife, and a heavy and rattling package for Clorthengis, foreman, at the Giant's Wheel. All deliveries, of course, turned out yet again to be more than each request had claimed, as Abanye was hiding in his armoire from a couple of stinkweed shamblers that were inadvertently drawn to his cottage after some local foraging. And Magiloy requested further foraging herself, in exchange for a spicy tonic made from the peppers just delivered. In search of coppercap mushrooms on Slab Hill, the crew saw to the task and found one of the many mysterious stone slabs that gave the hill its namesake, shoved aside to reveal an ancient and ominous barrow beneath. Noticing someone picked the mushrooms and entered the barrow before them, they sought to make sure this person was all right, and found the half-orc Filric within, terrified and shaken at the emergence of the shadow of an ancient warlord known as Karsten Starhand. Fighting the undead, evading magical traps, forcing the shadow back to rest, and rescuing Filric, the crew was making great strides in impressing the locals in a very short time. And David Ettercap was compiling plenty of material for the second book of adventures he would undoubtedly pitch to Aelin. It was when they met Clort that they were put into motion towards something not just larger than themselves, but larger than Otari itself, though it would take some time to know its full extent. As they made their way up to the Giant's Wheel, it was obvious the day's shift had come to an unusually early end. However, Clort gave a hearty laugh when he opened his package. An old friend had sent it along, filled with pins of victory from the Aurorium, the Colosseum, and Absalom. All pins of those who once won their bouts, but eventually lost to Clort himself. Miroslav was beside himself with glee. The underperforming strongman was a superfan from Clort's sporting days. Though Miroslav's fandom came on a bit strong, ironic given his reputation among the crew thus far, Clort was honored and felt no shame in asking a request of the crew. He explained the workers were sent home early thanks to evidence of arson along the log flume to the north. This was not the first time the lumberers had discovered such signs and cut the day short, nor was it the first time the crew had encountered such a thing themselves. Coincidence? The content in David's book would surely think not. The next task was at hand, and the crew found themselves along the impressive flume in search of the reported scorchings. Opting to lie in wait, along came the confirmation of their suspicions. More hellhounds. But this time they were not accompanied by their remarkably distant canine relatives, but a well-armed and imposing bugbear directing them to do their dirty and dangerous deed. Confronting the situation and the fiends, the crew put them down and discovered these foes were on a low rung for hire. Put up to the job by a group of dwarves that called themselves the Leadbuster Lads. And with this news, David Edercap looked at his boss and watched closely with fascination and concern, sketching what he saw in his face, as this discovery caused Aelin's blood to run cold. Training new guards takes time. Maybe not as long as in the big city where the resources are plenty, but the job more complex, but long enough. And so, the weary crew warily continued their efforts to aid the town in what needed doing, albeit with Aelin and David more frequently glancing over their respective shoulders. Their next task was all too appropriate, coming from a local lumber company and through Eloria. They were to escort supplies along the road for safety, not a far cry from their quest to have the road to the Rodden Bow Club guarded. However, safety concerns here were now a little different than the usual fauna pushing the boundaries of their territory, as more reports of arson and fire and even increased monster presence have been steadily feeding the rumor mill. Eloria had packed together a wagon load of supplies needed at one of the farther lumber camps owned by the Ingleholtz family's lumber company, Whistledown Cutters. Though Eloria suspected no real danger, a touch of jumpiness had gotten the best of her, and she resolved to use the tested, tried, and true resource of the club's crew. Down the granary road they trekked once more. The crew gave a nod of their heads and returned to the tips of the caps of the farmers along the way, as they viewed the repairs well underway and heard the thankful yet ill-at-ease praises for their efforts around the greater Otari area. All was still and quiet, simple and smooth along the road, until they turned the bend to Maunder Bridge. No one in Otari recalled how the sturdy bridge got its name, but it long served as the primary crossing of a small but fast and potentially troublesome stream. However, upon this crossing, something very different, but no less troublesome, stood in the way. A stout, wavy-haired dwarf, introducing himself as Khotgar, positioned himself on the far end of the bridge. Taking note of the unusually well-armed nature of a simple wagon escort, he pressed the crew for news and information in Otari. The crew's suspicion of the dwarf grew, and tensions rose steadily. Khotgar was not about to let them pass, and for the first time, the crew at large heard the name Aelin had been trying to bury, as the dwarf called him out as Vale. Khotgar was indeed one of the Leadbuster Lads, one of four very violent ghosts of Aelin's past, a quartet of uncontrollable brothers who once worked for Aelin's greatest rival. And though on a usual day, this dwarf would let most go by and continue along the road, this day it came to blows, as the dwarf intended to claim a bounty upon Vale's head, and cheerily delivered news of the death of Aelin's old friend Din at the hands of his old rival, Chalkface. David, of course, was among the bewildered, but especially so, because according to the accounts in his book, the events should have been reversed, with Chalkface dead at the hands of Din. And Aelin was either unaware of his survival, or had a knack for bending the truth for a good story. Either way, the storyteller in David was delighted, and his hand poised over his weapon. The dwarf swung his great hammer and called for the aid of his hiding pet leopard, which sprang down from a tree with great speed. But the crew was quick to put them both down, never to harry another traveler again. Although this fresh newborn news might be just the thing David Edercap would need to properly pitch book number two, the pit in Aelin's stomach would need refilling before such a time could pass. And for the moment, the question that bagged was this. What on Galarian was Khotgar Leadbuster doing on this road, guarding this bridge? Part of the answer to that question came swiftly, as they found a hidden path within the overgrown brush along the forest line, a path that led to something long forgotten. Something forgotten exactly as long as the origin of the name of Maunder Bridge, in fact. A small castle, worn and abandoned, standing alone, hidden by the flora and the protective canopy of trees. Within a fountain in front of the castle, the crew found a rusted box, and within the box, a silver signet ring set with a large ruby and inscribed with the words, Lord Maunder. In a piece of parchment brittle with age that read, The bearer of this deed and ring shall be the owner of Maunder Castle, Maunder Bridge, and all appurtenances thereto. What this meant exactly, and more specifically how legally binding it would have been at the time, was interrupted by yet another unwarranted hostility, as a perched gargoyle on the eaves of the castle sprung to lively animation and swooped down upon them. Battle-worn from their near defeat at the claws of the cruel creature, the crew sought refuge inside, quickly discovering more of what Khotgar was protecting. The castle was not empty. Quite the opposite, as the second past-life ghost appeared before Aelin in the form of Morgrim Leadbuster. After a short confrontation that left Morgrim dead upon the floor next to his risen dead lackeys, the crew discovered his studies on necromancy and fiendish summoning, perhaps explaining the rise in monster population in the area. I say perhaps, though, because of two factors. One, the operation appeared, in all likelihood, too small for the rate of said rise. And two, an unsigned letter addressed to the Leadbusters was found, stating that they were, quote, stepping into business they would be smart to avoid. Aelin, of course, knowing they were indeed not smart enough for any such a thing. The letter further stated that they should stop their co-opting of local monsters that rightfully owe their allegiance to the mother of monsters. This revelation was nothing but puzzling to the crew, and thus was to be set aside until the current task was done. And so, they headed back along the road, possibly richer with land and deed for their efforts, but unsettled by the mysteries that remained shrouded to them. As they finally arrived at the lumber camp, they were met with thanks and gratitude from the laborers and the foreman Jolibin Urfell. But before the crew could leave for their home ahead of the setting sun, the camp was set upon with a well-coordinated attack. The plan, of course, not accounting for the crew itself. As the remaining two Leadbusters, Omblin and Hargret, attacked with a swarm of rats infused with brimstone and fire, and more hellhounds, of course. The lumberers bravely joined their leader Jolibin in the fight for their lives, swinging their axes and tipping their log piles over the rats and hounds alike, and the crew dispatched the final lot of Aelin's haunting past. Final, for now, that is. And the only thing left to explain the reasons why were detailed maps, gold-lined pockets presumed to be payment, and the burgeoning question, who hired the lads? And who is the mother of monsters? And for once, brave David Ettercap hoped there was no interruption on the crew's way back to the Rod and Bow Club. He had far too much to write about the crew. Venerable heroes in the making.